My name is Dylan Masaru Nelson. I am multiracial. I'm Japanese and Danish American. I'm a pastor. I'm a marriage and family therapy student. And this is The Cultural Christ.
Welcome, everyone. I'm your host, J.W. Buck. In this podcast, we explore the intersection between the Christian faith and cultural identity. We hold interviews with followers of Jesus to discuss the way our faith impacts our culture and how our cultural identity impacts faith. Now to this week's episode. Welcome, Dylan. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, Josh.
Yes. For anybody who can't watch this, which you're most likely not watching, Dylan, wonderful looking guy, mustache right now. We got a mustache going. How long have you had?
November.
That's right. Mm-hmm. What am I doing without a fully formed mustache and shaving the rest?
Yeah. I mean, I cheated. I already had it formed with a beard and then I'm like, I just shaved it. Then I'm like, oh yeah, it's November. So now this is my excuse for why I have a mustache.
Well, for those listening, Dylan and I have known each other for a minute. Probably a good, how many years would you guess we've known each other, man? Like ballpark?
It's been longer than a decade for sure. Yeah. So maybe it's like 15 years.
Yeah. Yeah. About 15 years when I was in Bible college and Dylan and his family attended the same church. We got to know each other quite a bit and kind of stuck together over the years through various seasons and ministry stuff. I know you well, but I'm excited for people to get to know you who don't. Tell us about your background, where you grew up, cultural identity. Fill us in.
Yeah. So I grew up in a small town called Simi Valley in Southern California. It's an interesting a pocket, but when people ask about it, I usually tell them they pray to Reagan and Jesus in that order because they have the Reagan Library.
And it's on a hill and everything. It's like, yeah, the Holy of Holies set apart.
It stands as a beacon of like hope against everything against Reaganomics.
Nice.
So I was born there and grew up there and actually grew up in the same church that that Josh was interned at. My parents started it back in the day with Francis Chan. This is ages ago. And so as a baby there, I was dedicated there. But my mom, she's Japanese. And then my dad, he mostly identifies as American, but also Danish as well. And so it's a fun hodgepodge of I guess I consider myself Danish and Japanese American.
Got it. Yeah. So what was it like growing up in the suburbs for you now that you can reflect back on it to a degree? How does it form you culturally growing up in a space that's dedicated to be a monocultural kind of like white utopia that does not like LA and expels LA in a lot of ways, even though a lot of people work there, but they drive out to the suburbs in Ventura County. Just talk about cultural formation there.
Yeah. So it was, as you pointed out, yeah, predominantly white community. There's definitely pockets of people of different ethnic backgrounds, but very white. Most of my friends growing up, though, were Hispanic and Latino. I'm biracial, and most people, though I'm Japanese and white, people think I'm Mexican most of the time, especially in that context. But I'll step into other contexts, and they'll think I'm something else. So people think I'm Italian. Some lady started speaking Farsi to me when I was in Glendale.
Nice.
So it kind of fit in these different pockets, and I certainly had a lot of friends that were white, but most of the friends that I chose and enjoyed being around and identified with most were Hispanic, Latino. So Ecuadorian, El Salvadorian, Mexican, Guatemalan, that group. And There were some Asians that I knew, but I never felt like I necessarily fit in with them. From my perspective growing up, they're like, oh, they're cooler than me. I'm not cool enough to hang out with them. But that formed a lot of, I think, in some ways, being biracial, looking back, it highlights a trend of not only people are confused about who I am on the surface, but I think around that and even discovering who I am now and looking back, it's created a lot of confusion, as well as I think now a lot more curiosity and excitement of trying to integrate those different backgrounds.
So we have to coin a phrase that is nowhere in the world, probably for good reason, but you are ethno-fluid. Let's coin that phrase. What that means is when you're in different environments, you're interpreted through various lenses of ethnicity. It's like a joke. It's not a real phrase, but it's interesting that you present differently depending on what communities you're in. Do you like that? And I'm like fully white, but I get that too. When I lived in Africa, different places in the States, people actually don't pin me as white right away. I get pinned as other things. And then depending on how much I've been out in the sun or if I have a beard, these types of things, it does change people's perceptions of me. I don't pass as white in a lot of environments, and that's to my benefit. Do you like that about yourself, or is that confusing because you don't feel rooted in kind of those two identities, whether it's Danish or Japanese? Talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah. I mean, there's some aspects that I enjoy about it. Certainly. I think the ability to want, I think in some regards to go unnoticed, which can be a cause of some frustration, but also on other levels, it's nice to not have the attention on me. Like, oh, we don't know who he is, so we're not even going to pay attention.
He's not speaking Farsi back to me. I will move on.
Like, he's not one of us. That's fine. but on the other hand, I think it's been sad, but also frustrating to be able to be called and named all these different things that are not who I am.
Yeah.
So it's nice to not have to fit in a box or a specific label, so to speak. But on the other hand, especially around certain people, especially if I want to be known, I think it becomes especially hard to make that happen.
Yeah. Talk to me, Dylan, a little bit about where you are today in your journey. We're all on this cultural identity journey, and then faith maps onto that too. But when you think about your Danish or white self and your Japanese American self that's been gifted you through your mom, where are you at in this discovery process of like the aspects of your cultural identity that are important to you or you're trying to understand better?
Yeah, that's a great question. I it's constantly moving and adjusting. I think whenever you're trying to integrate things that's just seem so far apart from each other. You talk about Eastern versus Western, all these different things in this world. I guess it creates a lot of excitement. I'll say that. But I would say recently, one of the things that I've been processing through, especially with regards to my Japanese side, there's just been so much that's been lost with that side and history. I was even talking with someone else who's a quarter Japanese, and her dad is half. And so it follows a similar genealogical line as me, except they're a little bit more ahead. But she hardly got any stories from her past and her family's past of what it meant to live in the United States. Most of what she got from her context, which is similar to mine in a lot of ways, is we're not really Japanese. We can't be Japanese. We have to be white. I'm using air quotes.
Yeah.
We have to assimilate. And there, especially around World War II, there were a lot of, it was very shameful to be Japanese. And a lot of that, those hard things had to be swept under the rug. And so a lot of my journey now is trying to reclaim a lot of that culture. I mean, just practically, there are just things I was thinking genogram, that's an American family therapy term, but like your family heritage or line, there's a lot of documentation on my dad's side of the family, even from immigration standpoint, and there's all that paperwork, but on my mom's side, immigration, family names, all that stuff has been largely lost. So that's been an interesting process. And I think along that, I've been thinking more and processing this with different people and my mom, but there aren't any, my mom's maiden name is Okawa. My last name is Nelson. And as of currently, there are no coming Okawas. There are no Okawas coming up. They're either decided to not have kids, or the kids were daughters and they're taking on their husband's names. I it's sad that I feel like in some ways even that part is being erased. And so I've been processing more of even changing my last name, so a part of that can still live on through me. And if I were to have kids someday, that can live on through them and they can continue that work of discovering those things.
Thanks so much for sharing that. It's beautiful to hear and also hard to hear, because you talk about the pain or the discouragement that comes with this process. And so I do want to move to Jesus. And this is a question I've been asking everybody. When you came to faith in Christ and having grown up in the church, did you have an imagination about what Jesus looked like or the ethnicity of Jesus? Was that something like felt board when you were young and like the different people from the stories? Yeah. Or was that not really thought about, not very important, the skin color and the ethnicity of Christ? Just curious to hear.
Well, I would say whenever I think of Jesus, I think of, at least growing up, it was usually the Passion of the Christ, which I think is a white guy. I mean, generally think of a white guy if you were to think about ethnicity.
Yeah.
But I think with the church context I grew up, which in some ways, I don't know whether this is worse or even more sinister, but ethnicity was something that wasn't really talked about, especially when it came to Jesus or even our own faith identity. I mean, I'm not good at Bible references, but the notion is Jesus made this new community, this new nation. And so any other thing with regards to your past and especially your ethnic identity, that's part of your sinful past.
Yeah.
When you're found in Christ, you're part of this new nation where Jesus is the king. And so some of those ethnic stuff, I think, unfortunately, got erased or wasn't talked about in my church context. And which is interesting, especially since the lead pastor was a Chinese American. And so there wasn't much of those conversations, even in that context too.
Yeah. Yeah, Dylan, it's something very common in any mono-ethnic space. So mono-ethnic is the fancy word for it's the same, generally the same people group in an area and a suburb in particular, at least in North America. They were created to maintain white culture, whatever that is, kind of a settler mentality where you assimilate or you don't fit in. You got to move somewhere else if you don't fit in. People look at you strange if you don't fit in. And it's just assumed that everybody is going to speak the same, act the same, drive the same vehicles, eat the same food that has been adopted into a white community, like a Panda Express or something like that. It's like white Chinese food. And so it's no surprise that our theology is lacking in that area within mono-ethnic spaces. And it's not just a white problem, but any community where it's only that culture, you're not going to think too much about how does my culture or ethnicity come into my faith here. The challenge there is, in the Bible, we see a valuing of culture and a valuing of cultural identity and Jesus coming. And every Christian is in a cross-cultural relationship with Christ. Every single Christian, unless you're of a very particular Jewish tribe and you still live in an agrarian ancient society, which that could happen somewhere in the world. But most of us, it's like we have to cross cultures as Gentiles to come into the faith community of Christ. And secondarily, Dylan, this is stuff we know, but Christianity never would have gotten off the ground without the Jews going, all right, we have to cross culture to communicate to Gentile communities about the gospel. And Paul's an example of that. And so, man, we have so much work to do in giving space for people to process things. What draws you to Jesus? What draws you to the gospel? You know, like when you think about this Jewish rabbi, what pulls you into that faith?
Yeah. Oh man, that is such a loaded, multifaceted question for sure. But I think this is, I've talked about this with different people, but I think the part that just blows my mind about Jesus and who he is and how he was on one hand, like he was definitely a people for the lowly. And I mean, I grew up in a very privileged context. And there's aspects that I connect with, but then there's plenty of other aspects that I don't connect with. one aspect in my own life that has helped me connect with that more and seeing that side of Jesus is having a brother with disabilities and seeing how, even though he there's a great chance he won't be able to comprehend or understand all the different theological facets of Jesus and salvation and all those different things, Jesus, I know Jesus loves him, and I know that he loves Jesus as well. I don't know. I just know that Jesus stands with him and can connect with him in all the different ways. And seeing someone like that, just seeing relationally through Jesus, but then through other people, how that's been lived. Like, yeah, this is amazing. On the other hand, this is the part that's harder for me to connect with. I know we've talked about this too. There's the even more privileged white Western God, I have my rights and my guns and my Bible, my right to speak. It's hard for me to, like, did he really care about that? Does he? I don't know. I mean, they're kind of up there, you know, they're up there in their own heads. The part that blows my mind is when Jesus was on the cross, he said, "Forgive them, for they know not what they do," which he was speaking to the obvious, there was the mob and then there were the people in that mob, but he was also speaking to the people who were also in power and crucifying him too.
Wow.
Which that, like, I still can't wrap my mind around that. A Jesus that's able to humanize and connect across these different spheres is so compelling to me. And in some ways it's helped me stay connected, and it is something that's, I hope to continue to strive for just show humility whenever I get upset.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, Jesus said that. And it doesn't denote the wrong that happened. Jesus was wronged still. And there were still ways for him to still, for things to be made right in a lot of ways. But even so, it was still, man, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Like, gosh, how do I live by that?
Yeah. As you continue to explore your cultural identity and the intersections of being white and Japanese American, how does Jesus come into that conversation for you? You know, another way to ask that is, like, how does Jesus dignify your cultural identity and the journey that you're on?
Yeah. I think this was during the pandemic. I was having a faith crisis. I think everyone was having a faith crisis. There were new questions brought on with George Floyd and what that happened there for me. And I know for other people, but I think in some ways that's where a lot of my perception started to change on Jesus, but myself growing up in a white community, Jesus wasn't necessarily an ethnicity or race, but in that context and what the things that were being preached or the things that were being sung about, Jesus was a man for the people in power. Man, Jesus was for white people. And I began to realize I'm not a white person. And my family, on my mom's side, they're not white. There's all these different, you know, contexts and cultures. Yeah. And especially what was happening to the African American community, like, would Jesus really stand up and say, would he stand for all that? And so that's when I began to have a crisis of faith. And I'm also a worship leader. And so I was asked to lead worship at different things. I was even asked to lead worship at a Trump rally.
I remember that.
Like, what am I doing? What have I done with my life that I ended up here and was asked to lead at a Trump rally? I think that caused me to question a lot, especially, is Jesus just, is worship leading just a thing where we get to beat our chest and say, our God is the greatest, and this is what our God does, is he rules with an iron fist. And so even digging into my family's history, how my grandpa coming to the United States, he became a Christian. In that day and age, around World War II, it looks a lot better to be a Japanese Christian than to be a Japanese Buddhist.
Yeah.
And so while I'm grateful to be a Christian, there was part of me that was asking too at that time, is my faith really sincere? And another angle that I wrestled with regards to that too is Japan is still, it's like less than 1% Christian evangelical.
Yeah.
And we preach a gospel that says Jesus is for everybody. So is this white Jesus that is where we're praising him and we're beating our chests and then my grandpa coming to faith. I think it was as authentic as it was, but he was, in some ways he was trying to assimilate to what was the power in those days. And then with that, I began to question, is Jesus really for everybody? Or is it just for people who are in positions of power or in more power and authority? I think it was learning from other people who were church leaders and Christians who were had different backgrounds, Christians of color, learning from them, but also understanding a little bit more of who Jesus was in his context. He was part of a marginalized community within the larger Roman Empire. Even with his belief system and his faith, that was even more marginalized. There's a lot of questions around his, you know, his birth at the time too. A lot of things around that that made me, I think, connect and realize, like, oh, I as a community that's been marginalized in a larger group, there's still space for me, and there's still space for other people to still connect with Jesus because of those aspects. Wow. He's created a space for us.
You hit on something so critical for those who follow Jesus. All around the world, we tend to make Jesus in our image, and we tend to imagine Jesus endorsing our lifestyle and our culture and all of this. And so having gone through COVID in a suburban environment with a lot of people that are in positions of power, when you're in crisis, you immediately are looking for a God to validate your lifestyle, your voting, where you come from, all those things. And I admire the journey that you've gone on in processing that. And so the question is, well, is God for the rich or the poor, or the marginalized or those in power? And however we answer that, we have to start with Jesus. In Colossians, it says the fullness of deity was pleased to dwell in Christ. The Jesus is the word, John 1. And so we come to Christ and have this full picture of how God decided to relate to humans. And like you said, it was from the margins to the margins, challenging people in power, disrupting the cultural systems around. And that's such a comforting thing for a lot of people, not everybody. And so I'm so grateful you kind of brought that out. With where you are right now, and you're not currently living in the suburbs, you're in the greater LA area, what does it look like for you to feel safe or comfortable in church or like around people where you are right now in your journey? What are some things that you feel or that you're looking for where you're like, I can be me where I am right now culturally? With friends, work, church, I want to hear.
Yeah, Josh, I think I'm still in some ways trying to find that. I live in Los Angeles. I live in Pasadena, which it's interesting which side of the fence coming into Pasadena, but even still, Pasadena still feels very white. But I heard it. Pasadena was one of the last cities west of the Mississippi to end segregated schools, which is why a lot of the schools, there's a higher population of private schools here than there are public schools. At least they're more prominent, but it still feels very white in a lot of ways. With my cultural context being Western, there's elements where I can still fit in with Western people or white people that I can. And then I work at a predominantly Chinese American Presbyterian church in San Gabriel. And so that's been extremely healing just to be around more Asian Americans and learning the way their language and the different ways they interact with each other and their family dynamics. And there's been fun things I've picked up along those lines, but it still feels like in a lot of ways, a lot of my life is still segmented where there's this code switching happening between different groups of people. I'm not exactly sure where that comes from, but I know there's elements of that coming from the context I grew up in, as well as just being multiracial. You just learn how to code switch and it just becomes so natural. And I think to the point where I've begun to recognize more and more that am I really myself in these different spaces? Am I finding healing or growth? So it's a question I'm still trying to figure out.
Yeah.
I think the three main areas that I'm processing through is I'm in school in Fuller's Marriage and Family Therapy program.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of conversations around this stuff. So it's been really interesting processing that, not only for myself, but hearing other people's process too, that is enriching that I didn't have before. Again, being in an Asian American, predominantly Asian American community in San Gabriel, there's just things that I feel like it's like a breath of fresh air in a lot of ways, in the ways I like to interact. You preached at one of our retreats, and you made the observation, which I think I've pointed this out too, is when we're eating together, it usually takes about 2 to 3 hours.
Yeah.
Whereas with Western people, it's like 30 minutes to an hour. You eat and then you're done. Whereas in my context, it's you're just eating and talking and chatting. And so after church, we'll go out to eat. And then I'm usually, if service is at 11, I'm not getting home until 5, because afterwards we're eating and talking and having a good time, which has been amazing, but totally not my past experience.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks so much for sharing about that. Last question I want to ask, Dylan, for any leaders who are listening or anybody who wants to be more sensitive culturally, and I'm adding this question, it wasn't something I sent over, so thanks for taking it. But what are some tips you would have for people who just want to be more sensitive culturally when they're around the other, when they're around somebody who's not like them? You as a person, and then also with your training within marriage and family therapy, you are a deeply empathetic person. You ask really good questions. You have a great way of disarming people. And that also gets into cultural humility. What are some things that people can do, just practical tips to make people feel comfortable culturally from your perspective?
Well, I think speaking to leaders specifically, I think if you're seen as a leader or recognizes that in whatever community, you're in a very privileged position.
Mm.
And so I just speaking for myself, it's easy to take that and to not see that other people have that privilege too. people have either put a lot of trust in you, or maybe you were hired into that. But there's a lot of these different things that got you there. But if you're interacting with people in the day to day, I think you alluded to this, but I think asking a lot of questions is certainly a very practical tool. I'll just speak for myself. When I more towards the beginning of these conversations, it started with me recognizing that I was in a very privileged spot. Growing up in Simi Valley, mostly around Western folks, I got to learn how to, I was also working at a church and was viewed as a leader. And so I got to know the language of how to interact and the code switch and all these different things, but it was actually sitting down and having conversations with people who are normally perceived as lesser than in a particular community, and taking the chance to learn from them. I think personally, there are a lot of my own theology, my own experience of how I've normally see the world was definitely challenged in that. And there were times where I felt really uncomfortable because I felt like, oh, I'm the outsider in this conversation. I'm not in on these different things. But I think those different feelings or senses of being uncomfortable were like, okay, if I'm uncomfortable right now, that's usually a good sign that I'm moving in the right direction in terms of trying to understand other people.
Yeah, no, thanks so much for those tips. I think they're wonderful, and it's going to be a blessing to those who are listening. So Dylan, thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Josh.
Thank you so much for listening. If you want more content, you can go to jwbuck.org or follow me on Instagram, handles jwbuck. If you have any questions about culture, cultural identity, or faith, feel free to send me a message. Hope you'll join us next week.